This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you in part by your local Hyundai dealers, WSCR Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, and Odyssey Sports Station.
The Score! This hour is brought to you by Jewel Osco.
That team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Steve Rosenbloom.
There was a keg stand I lost to an 81-year-old lady. She got off the main floor and it was really close.
Mark Grody.
I've been waiting to get a hold of this guy for years. Like Channel 2 News is out there interviewing people. Yeah, I've been talking to my wife about getting Steve. He once connected my dots and more to my blade. I'm gonna dunk his ass.
They suck. So you don't have to.
Can't you morons do anything right?
Founding members of the WB Club.
Smoke weed every day.
The three words that describe this show, and I quote.
Stink, stank, stunk.
It's Saturday Suckage on the Score.
We should be 670 WSUK.
Apologize. What is your name? I don't know who you are, the host.
Steve Rosenbloom, that's my name, Philly Jane. This is Saturday Suckage. Let's take roll. Let's see who else is here. Grobber.
It sucks and it freebases.
Don Cooper.
If I think something sucks, I'll tell you it sucks.
Jake Arrieta.
This sucks. Really, it does.
Eloy Jimenez.
Hey, you guys not going to make anyway. You guys suck. And when I got traded the next day, oh, welcome to the Suck team.
Toby!
Oh, my God, this sucks!
Random Bears fan.
Terry Bourne!
Finally made a list of somebody who thinks he sucks besides I do.
Liam Hendricks!
I wouldn't say seeking perfection, it's just mainly trying not to suck.
Julie Swyka.
Man, that sucks.
Wilson Contreras.
Losing suck, I'll tell you that, and that's all I can say.
George Wendt.
We had fun, but there you go. I sucked.
Garth Algar.
Turn it off, man! Turn it off! It's sucking my will to live!
The legend, Steve Dahl.
Disco sucks! Disco sucks!
Candace Parker.
It sucks.
Roquan Smith.
Yeah, man. Sucks.
Zach LaVine.
Sucks to have it happen game one.
DeMar DeRozan.
You know, it just sucks.
Mike Tomlin.
It all sucks. There's not degrees of suck. It all sucks.
Josh Allen.
Sucks. Losing sucks. Sucks.
Pete Fairbanks.
No, I thought it generally sucked. I didn't think it was a specific suck. I thought it was like an all-encompassing type of suck.
AJ Pierzynski.
They should have just come out and said, hey, we're going to suck this year. And everyone would have been like, okay.
Pedro Grifol.
We're 20 games in. Our record sucks.
Michael Kopech.
It sucks, man. There's no easy way to put it.
Mark Burley.
So it did suck.
J.D. Martinez.
They say we suck, we suck. Let's suck. Let's go suck together. Let's go have fun sucking.
Bob Costas.
I also don't understand, or maybe I should just applaud you, for having the self-confidence to label your own show Saturday Suckage.
Robbie Triano.
Steve!
Look who's back.
Rosenblum.
Guy
up?
From Detroit. Guy from Michigan. Look who's back, back, back.
I love
Robbie's
you.
Robbie's back, back, back. Look who's here.
Say it back. I said,
look,
I love you.
Yeah, I love you.
Oh,
Robbie,
Steve.
I love you. Wow. You're a Tiger fan wearing the Cubs hat. Look at you. Look at you.
My dog chewed up my Tiger's hat, so this is what was next.
I want to welcome everyone to Saturday Suckage. We suck so you don't have to. We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealer. Our phone number at the Score, 312-644-6700. Is that right? Or 6767? Which number
is
it?
Yeah, that one, 6767.
Wow, look at this. I've just been here. Okay. The number also gets you to our text line, 312-644-6767. Even before we get on the air, Dodger Boy texted, "Let the sucking begin." Yes, here we are. Saturday Suckage. While you were sleeping, Illinois won. Jameis Winston signed with the Giants. Aaron Rodgers left Pittsburgh without a deal. And George Foreman died. One of the great boxing figures of all time. He passed away at 76. Foreman was, as I'll explain to Robbie here, who had no idea, Foreman was a soap opera as imagined by a wrestling creator. Houston gang kid, celebrated Olympic gold medalist, a scary heavyweight champion. A guy who lost him, got suckered by Muhammad Ali in the jungle, lost his championship, became a minister, sold a wildly successful grill and would sell the company for $137 million, made an unbelievable return to the heavyweight championship, returned to the at 45, flooring Michael Moorer for the IBF title in Vegas, and now in my best grabber voice, it's not as good as Grody's, "I was there." I was in the third row, and my notepad nearly got Michael Moorer's blood on it from the way Foreman hit him in the 10th round. Stunning. And George Foreman, you may or may not know this, George Foreman was responsible for eliciting probably the most famous boxing call ever from Howard Cosell.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
I'll have more to say about Foreman. That's a great, cut. It's a legendary, it's an iconic cut. Down goes Frazier. That's Cosell. When, indeed, Foreman knocked Frazier down 6 times, and he got a TKO in the second round. I'll talk more about that in the show. But first, the NCAA field of 32 is set. Here we are. Yesterday winners were chalkity, chalkity, chalk. That includes Illinois. If you're into chalk, that's it. Number 6, Illinois. Pulled away from number 11 seed Xavier. Musketeers go home, an 86-73 victory. Got 4 Illini players in double figures. Will Riley, 22 points. But not just 22 points. Will Riley, oh my God, 18 in the second half. 7 in a row, one critical run. Will damn Riley, ladies and gentlemen. And they had... they had 2 other guys in, going, 20 and 10. Ivisic, 20 points, 10 rebounds. And Jakučonis, 16, 10, 9 rebounds, almost a triple-double. The Illini made 12 three-pointers. That's how you move on in the tournament. So they advance. They're going to play number 3 seed Kentucky. Illini is 22 and 12. Kentucky, 23 and 11. Sweet 16 berth on the line. Tip is on CBS on Sunday, 4:15. Remember when Brad Underwood scheduled a game with Duke a month ago and his team got decapitated by 43 points, like the worst in school history? Remember? Yeah, good times. The Illini have won 5 of 6 since then and have scored at least 80 points in each win. Maybe it was the right idea. You get yourself a butt-whipping. You get everybody's attention. If you're the coach and you have that game and your guys go, uh-oh, and your coach, you say, yeah, that's what the number one team in the country looks like. That's what one of the odds-on favorites to win the title looks like, and that's how you played. Hello. So they won 5 of 6 since then. And so this weekend... what a thing. For those of you who like to fill out the wild, crazy bracket, for the first time since 2017. No team seeded 13, 14, 15, or 16 won a game. That's unbelievable the way things have gone, especially in the NIL era. You get enough money, you can get one guy, and you're a 15 seed, you should be able to beat a number two. Nope. There were two 12-over-5 upsets. You kind of expect that. Yesterday it was Colorado State beating Memphis, all beaten up, and sorry, Penny Hardaway, bye-bye again. By the end of the round of 64, the SEC would have, they had 70,000 teams in the tournament, I think. That was the exact number. Anyways, six of the 14 teams had lost. The Big Ten, look at that. The Big Ten, which is more than 10, 8-0 through the first 2 days of the tournament. That is the best record any league in history in the first round ever. And the thing is, even with six losses, given the fact the SEC had 14 teams, they also have eight teams in the round of 32. So the Big Ten and the SEC account for half of this weekend, half of the field of 32. Another example of how chalky this has been, the average margin, this is from Optostats, the average margin of victory in the round of 64 this year was 16.7, the highest ever in that round. 10 of the wins were 25 points or more. Again, the most ever. The loud cheering you heard yesterday afternoon, West Virginia. Ole Miss told North Carolina to go home. So that means only one ACC team reached the second round. It happens to be the one of ones, the number one seed. And Duke got a solid return from injury from future non-Bull Cooper Flagg. 93-49. It was like a mercy killing of St. Mary's.
What a stray to the Bulls right there.
It's true. Right?
It is true. I mean, they just keep, they keep winning.
They can't. No, they can't. In a year where they should. Arturis Karnišević is great at sucking. He's the prince of the play-in. And now he's moving on to, he's closing in on the playoffs. They'll never get there, but he's moving in better play. The prince of the play-in picked the wrong time to be the prince of the play-in.
Well, he goes half suck. He doesn't go full suck. I wish he went full suck.
Thank you, Robert Downey Jr. Tropic of Cancer right there. By the way, that was Tom Cruise's greatest role in that movie. He absolutely was special in Tropic of Cancer. Anyways.
Thunder.
Tropic. Yeah. Well, it was originally. I'm sorry. That was my feckless and my feckless youth, which was rushed into puberty. Tropic of Cancer was a whole thing. So he will be non-Bull Cooper Flagg, and I'm just stating that. And Colorado State had the biggest upset. You know, we have some betting partners here, wagertainment partners, where you can bet the lowest seed to win a game, right? So if you thought, if you had for the first time from 2017, no 13, 14, 15, or 16 seeds are going to win, then 12-5, which was always ripe for upsets, could have made some money on that. All right, just saying. We will talk about all that, money-making opportunities, investments with Ryan Horvath at noon from the BetMGM Network. BetMGM tonight. Last week we had on Brad Evans, and now a favorite of the show, Ryan Horvath, will be here. We'll talk to you about investing, making the most of your weekend. Today, Calipari versus Pitino. For your viewing pleasure, they're not playing, but they'll be out there as well-haired as usual. And they have quite a history. They're not really friends, certainly acquaintances, but they've often been in the same sphere. I mean, coaching great teams, in trouble, in the NBA, out of the NBA, moving around. Since 1991, Pitino and Calipari have met four times. Pitino at Kentucky went 2-0 against Calipari's UMass team. Calipari's Kentucky went 2-0 against Patino's Louisville. Kentucky seems to be the central theme here, and Kentucky is playing Illinois, 3 versus 3 seed that Illinois faces. Then they were in the NBA, Patino's Celtics. You know, Kevin McHale ain't walking through that door. No, he didn't. And Rick Pitino walked out that door. Calipari's Nets, they split their 90s meetings. So Pitino's number two, St. John's, 6.5 point favorite over Calipari's number 10 seeded Arkansas. That's per BetMGM. We're talking to a BetMGM guy. Ryan Horvath will be here. Who he likes today, who he likes tomorrow, who might have moved up or down on a favorite list. Does a conference's success, the way we've seen the SEC, they've kind of failed. Almost half the teams are out. The Big Ten, 8-0, every team's moving on. That includes Michigan State last night, Michigan. So what does that mean in terms of investing? He'll join me at noon. At 1 o'clock, Mark Potash will be here. And it's a shame. He's one of the – all the cool kids are leaving the Sun-Times. Mark took the buyout. He's a favorite of this show. He's covered the Bears for years. He's been on this show. I love having him on. He's a wonderful guest. So I want to thank him. And I want to hear what he thinks as he leaves. He's kind of leaving the Bears to fend for themselves and leaving the Hallis Hall press room to now turn over the responsibility of someone else to ask questions of the Bears that put blood in their urine. That's a tall order. That's somebody's job up there. And next, talk to Chris Emma. Chris Emma works for us. We're The Score, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. He covers the Bears. The Bears made some moves. Special teams, receivers room, but they got needs. They got big needs. They got needs as the draft comes up. The draft's next. We'll talk to Chris about that after a break. And I do want to say this. The questions will probably be there. They are be there. They are there on the text line. And I just want to say, Dan Bernstein's a friend of mine. I've known Dan for 30 years. Some of the most fun I've ever had in radio were shows I've done with Dan. We did a show when they drafted Travis Knight and then cut him 2 days later in order to pay Michael Jordan $30 million. Michael Jordan went right past $20 million to $30 million, and they had to cut Travis Knight. And he had been a Bull for 2 days, and Dan and I decided to ask when we were working at 6 in the morning, talk about whatever you want, but we're going to ask you, what's your favorite memory of Travis Knight? Whether it was his face on the Bixby and Crothers building, the time he stopped traffic on the Kennedy, or the time that he won that first championship over the Lakers when Michael passed him the ball and he scored 20 points in the fourth quarter. Or the time that they won 72 games. It was just, it went on, and I was in tears. And it went on for so long and resounded so well, we heard from Travis Knight's family in Michigan over a fax machine. Some of the most fun I've ever had on the radio was with Dan and listening to Dan. He is one of the smartest people I know. He's one of the best read people I know. And he was the most fun to be around on radio because I did not know what happened, even admitting that I made life difficult for him because his son would hold up some of the things I'd write at the breakfast table and say, look at this, neener, 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 that kind of stuff. Now that kid's growing up to be a podcast partner for his father. I just want to say that. I want to say that about Dan. He's somebody I'll miss. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
DuVernay will bring it out. Got a block from Hill. He's got a lead blocker on the way. Chased by the kicker. Getting a block from Harrison. All the way he goes. 103 yards!
Some people like Chris Emma.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score. Here's your host, Steve Rosenblum.
Wow, big voice guy saying my name, Saturday Suckage. Wait a minute, Robbie Triano. Who said that about Chris Emma?
That would be Mr. Mark Rohde.
Oh, was he doing an Everyone Loves Chris? Was he doing a Chris Rock thing? Is that a reference to that?
No, he just said some people like Chris Emma. And I like Chris Emma. I love Chris Emma.
All right, well, let's get him on the air. The highlight, by the way, was courtesy Kevin Harlan on the call. Highlight courtesy of CBS. CBS bringing you Devin Duvernay. And now the Bears are bringing you Devin Duvernay. Let's find out what it means. Joining me on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline is Chris Emma of The Score. He covers the Bears. Download the Circa app today. Chris, is Devin Duvernay going to do all that for the Bears? Hi, Chris.
Hey, Rosie. First of all, let me just say, 10 years at The Score, it's an honor to finally have my own bumper music. And with Grody's completely out of context line in there as well, I'm honored. It's great to have. I get excited every time I hear it.
Wait. You buried the lead. 10 years at the, you've been at The Score 10 years.
Yep, getting old.
Wow, I don't know how they let that happen.
Tell me about it.
But congratulations on sneaking it through. That is just wow, flying under the radar like that. Congratulations.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Oh, Devin Duvernay, right? Yes, Devin Duvernay.
It's so flummoxed by the fact. Now you started thinking about it. Yeah, how did they let me stay here 10 years?
I check every day, man. I check every darn day.
You're Milton Wadhams from Office Space. You took your red swing line stapler down to the basement, and you just stayed there, and you worried about the cake-to-person ratio, and that's how you survived.
I don't think it's even the basement. I think they just got me in this little closet on the ninth floor there at Pru Plaza, and I got my stapler and good vibes. So, yeah, made it this far.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about the new kick returner or punt returner. How do you see the Bears dividing this up, and where else does Duvernay fit in?
Well, yeah, it's an exciting pickup from the special team standpoint, and to get a guy who's a dedicated and proven returner. Somebody's going to help that unit quite a bit because they've not really had – much stability in the return game. You feel like you're getting one of the better returners in the NFL with this guy. And then flip it to the offensive side. I know the numbers aren't eye-popping. He's not really established himself as a dynamic wide receiver, but we're talking about a coach in Ben Johnson who likes to use these guys down the depth chart in those receiving room to be gadgets, to be important parts of his offense when you're not expecting them. And when you're talking about a guy like Devin Duvernay, I think you're going to see him involved in some unique ways. We've seen that in Detroit with how Ben Johnson works, and that's what stuck out to me. You got a guy who is a proven dynamic returner who can take the ball a long way at any point when he gets the ball in his hands, and Ben Johnson knows how to use that on offense as well.
So the receivers room looks like what? What? Run it down for us, because there's been a lot of movement, and Keenan Allen is not walking through that door, as Rick Pitino would say. So there's DJ Moore, there's Roma Dunze, and now what? In whatever order you imagine they would be tiered.
Yeah, I think what you've seen so far with the moves in this offseason is really an endorsement in a way of Roma Dunze. They certainly believe he's going to become that dynamic wide receiver and number 10 overall pick last year, and the guy they really believe in. This is somebody that they feel is going to make a major difference for this offense. So you've not seen, you know, some dramatic move to get a tandem wide receiver. It's DJ Moore and Roma Dunze at the top of your depth chart. Yeah, Olamide Zaccheaus stepping in, who's going to play a key role. He brings an element of speed. He's a guy who's going to be a key blocker on the outside when you're talking about that outside zone stuff and get into the perimeters. Like, he's somebody who's going to be able to make a difference in the run blocking game, and he's not afraid to do the dirty work, which he's talked about. It's a great pickup. And then, Duvernay is a gadget. Curious to see. I think at this point that they're running out of patience with Tyler Scott, but he's going to get an opportunity, at least in the offseason program, to prove himself. They're still going to be looking for more wide receiver. I mean, they were looking at Rondale Moore along with Miko Harman, who both signed in the division, Packers and Vikings for those two, and that's when the move for Duvernay took place for the Bears. I think they're still going to be looking at the veteran market to see what's out there. And I think, you know, mid rounds in the draft, you're going to be able to see them pick up somebody who really fits what Ben Johnson's vision is for this offense.
Lamide slot is – did I miss the part where he takes the head off defenses? Did I miss that part from the slot? Is he not going to be able to do that? They still need that guy because there's nobody that's going to threaten a defense deep right now. I mean, based on pure speed, right? Am I missing that? Duvernay, is he the hope for that? Do they look at him that way?
Yeah, perhaps. He's got the ability to do it. He's one of the fastest guys in football. I mean, he set some of these next-gen marks of best of the season for miles per hour running with the ball in his hands, and most of that's in the return game. But you got to create a play caller who wants to figure out a way to get speed in the open field. So I think Devin Duvernay is potentially your guy to do that.
You know, when you talk about measuring guys' speed like he's a cheetah and with the ball in his hand, first of all, you're running routes. You don't have the ball in your hand. You have to represent that. And there's a difference between just straight line running speed and football speed. And that's why I wondered what would threaten the defense. If that guy's there, maybe you can find him later in the draft. Maybe that's what you do. I don't know, but I imagine Ben Johnson looking to expand the offense to as far as he can on whatever perimeter, whatever they're with no ceiling. That guy's got to be here. And I don't know if it's later in the draft, if they've got a nugget hidden that they're going to be looking at. Is there anybody who's jumped up in any kind of draft talk that you've seen who might be that guy?
Not yet. Look, this is where you trust your head coach / offensive innovator, Ben Johnson, to understand, this is what I want. This is what I value in the offense. And there's not an obvious name. You're talking about day two or day three of the draft, somebody in, you know, like a fifth-round flyer, somebody you say that's somebody who fits what we want to do. And that's somebody who checks all the boxes in the scouting process. So there's not a sexy name out there saying, no, this is the guy, this is the answer here. And I think, frankly, in the opening rounds, you got the pick, you know, number 10 overall, and then you got the two in the second. I think you're going to be looking toward the trenches and continuing to build those up. But there's going to be some flexibility in day three when you look to adding weapons on offense, and I think that's certainly going to be a possibility for the Bears.
So they have 10, they have 39, they have 41. Last week I said those three picks have to mirror what they bought in trade or in free agency, because they didn't buy really young guys. Dahlman's the youngest. He's 24 for a center. Sometimes it feels old depending upon the damage you've suffered and that kind of, and he's terrific. I love the pickup. He was a guy that Bijan Robinson would find. Okay, where is Dahlman? I'm going to run to his right, and there we go, right off one of his sides, and I'm going to have a lot of yardage. And that's terrific for whatever the Bears' running game is. But I think that, as you said, they're obligated to draft what they just bought and or signed. However, there is such a big hole, question mark, however you want to look at it, it's safety. How do you see them dealing with this? What is your view of the safety situation with the Bears, knowing nothing about Jaquan Brisker's health, but not looking like the arrow's pointing up at all?
It's a complicated situation, right? I mean, you're talking about a concussion. You're talking about concussion history. You can't predict. You know, it's not like an ACL where you're saying he's going to be back in 9 months or whatever, 9 to 12. Like, you don't know. You just don't know how it's going to be for Jaquan Brisker. And you're talking about a guy who's played a spectacularly violent style of football at safety. That's dangerous. And he's talked in the past about scaling it back. You know, if you're a guy who's made your career playing like that, it's hard to scale it back. When you get to the open field and you got a chance to take somebody out, like, it's hard to say, I need to preserve this. Like, you can't count on it. It sucks because this is just a part of the game that's horrible, and you're talking about a young man that they really believe in and like a lot, but he's in as your safety. He's going to be your star going into this year. He's cleared. He's ready to go. But obviously you have to have a strong reserve. You have to have something ready there. And I think to your point, Rosie, yeah, you should be looking to the draft and identifying somebody in those mid to late rounds who can be a fit for that. Somebody who you feel like can develop behind the scenes and be ready to go if need be. And you like to think that this will be Jaquan Brisker's last concussion and he's going to be able to have a long, healthy career. It's just, you can't count on that. You certainly cannot count on that.
No. I don't expect that at all. And I also go back to when Ryan Poles was on, I think it was Pro Football Weekly from the Super Bowl, and he was talking with Chris Sims and Mike Florio, and he said he believes that safety is the toughest position to scout. For whatever you need to know about what their original assignment was, the angle they took because of that, what were they doing because they misread their own assignment or they were trying to make up from someone else, felt that safety was the most difficult position to scout. And then he was kind of talked into thinking that, or saying that, that because he was a former offensive lineman, that he would know other things to look for and how he could scout that well. And I'm thinking, how could Christian say that? How could Florio say that? Their offensive line sucked. This is a guy who went into last year saying this is the greatest depth I've seen in the offensive line, which is why I want to ask you this question about who's making the free agency calls, who's making the draft calls. Is this simply Ryan Poles taking credit for everything Ben Johnson wants to do or else?
Look, The additions they made on the offensive line are important. You're talking about three new starters revamping the entire interior. But you made the point earlier, and I'm completely with you. Like, Joe Tooney is 32. He's a veteran. He's got 1 year left on his deal. He might be a one and done. That's the reality. He needs to show that he still is at a Pro Bowl or somewhere near that kind of level to earn an extension beyond this point, because he's a depreciating asset right now. Jonah Jackson's a guy they believe in. They see tools in, but he also had a tough year last year. You want to see him bounce back. You're not 100% sure what you're getting there. Drew Dolman seems like he's a high floor fit, somebody's going to make a big impact, but you need to go out and aggressively seek more depth on the offensive line, because the three guys that they brought in are fillers for mistakes and voids that were left over by Ryan Poles, draft failures, the inability to build that for the long term. And you've got stability for the time being, but certainly not for the long term. That's why if they draft an offensive lineman at 10 and he's not in the starting lineup for week one, you're fine with that. That's somebody you see as a long-term fit. To the point on the depth, like, you still got guys you're developing and now get to go behind the scenes. Kron Amagaji, who had a horrible outing in Minneapolis, and that's what comes to mind.
Yeah,
that's what comes to mind with him. But he's still a young player who's not anywhere near ready to be out on that field. He did not have an off-season program. He had time in practice with game preparation that does not help him develop as a player. Give him time. Let's see what he can do. Let's see how he develops with the new offensive line coach and with the ability to work behind the scenes and not be rushed in. They've got a guy, Bill Murray, they believe in, who's coming off the pectoral injury. They see him as a developmental piece. You got Ricky Stromberg, who was a third-round pick a couple years ago that they claimed off waivers midseason from Washington. A guy kind of behind the scenes there. That's a developmental player. That's a guy that they had high grades on, apparently, a couple years ago in the draft, and he went to Washington. You got young players you're hoping to develop, and if you're talking about a list 3-4 deep, if you have one of those guys that can reach their potential, then that's a win. And you do it behind the scenes with a veteran group in place, and you feel better about that depth. And now you do have the kind of depth that Ryan Poles felt he was talking about last year, but you still need more and more. You need to deepen that thing as much as you can on both sides of the lines, offensive and defensive lines, because their lack of depth got completely exposed, and that's a big part of why that season fell off last year.
Are you on the tarmac at O'Hare, Chris?
Are you in the background noise?
Yeah, yeah.
I live in Lincoln Park. I'm right by the Red Line. So that's the old Red Line flying.
Look at you,
by.
Red Line Diaries. Look at you. All righty then.
You want the sounds of a city man? Put me on air. Let's go.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Brown Line headed south in a bit, probably. Yeah, you got some. I hear a siren back out there now, so we got all the city noises coming your way.
Yeah, I suck, and I have Dolman at 24, what I said earlier. Drew Dolman's 26. It still can be. It seems young to everybody else, could be old as a center, but I love what he said, and I love Tooney's. I love what he said about working with a rookie quarterback and coming to work with Caleb. And I love what Joe Tooney represents, working with the quarterback having won Super Bowls with a quarterback that Caleb Williams wants to beat in the number of Super Bowls. So I would think that Caleb, that Joe Tooney would have Caleb Williams' attention and that would all be there. I don't know where, when do we find out? Because we heard so much about cadence early on in the OTAs and Caleb's cadence. Will it be the OTAs? Do you expect we'll find out what Ben Johnson is demanding Caleb Williams work on, whatever he feels he's short in?
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, it's every different quarterback, different coach I've been covering that said 10 years on the job, 10 years on the beat now, cover the Bears. It's how many different times have we heard we're going back to the basics with this quarterback, and this new coach wants to get through to the quarterback by ripping it down to the studs and starting over and building up a foundation. Here we are again, yet another new coach with a young quarterback trying to get off the ground here, but that's going to be the storyline at OTA. To your point about Tooney and Dolman, like, this team's got new leadership, and that, like, it sounds cliche, and it sounds like it doesn't matter, but then you watch a 10-game losing streak where the entire locker room is crumbling and turning on the staff, and you realize how important that leadership is. They had 8 captains last year and not a single leader. Like, imagine that. That's the way this season crumbled last year. Drew Dolman will probably wear a C on his chest. Joe Tooney will certainly wear a C on his chest. They didn't have a single offensive lineman, Rosie, wearing a C on their chest last year. Out of 8 captains, it's going to be imperative for this offense to have guys like that. Jordan Jackson as well, leader in his own right. You have 3 guys with great heads on their shoulders who've been around the game. In Joe Tooney's case, he's been around 2 of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes. They're going to be instrumental for Caleb Williams for the rest of this offense, and there's going to be a different dynamic in that locker room now because we saw how things fell apart on them last year. This leadership is going to make a big difference, and you feel like you can go in the right direction now and buy in with a new head coach because of the veterans that you have in that mix.
Chris, I appreciate your time. 10 years. Congratulations. Keep your head down. Keep moving. Look busy. Act like that, okay?
You're the best, buddy. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Chris. I'm of the score. Talking Bears here. But here, we're going to change subjects. The Cubs, they take on the Rockies today in Cactus League action from Sloan Park in Mesa. Zach Zabin and Ron Coomer will be on the call starting at 2:55. Cubs spring training games on the score are sponsored by Sloan, the leader in smart water and commercial restroom solutions. Take a break and talk a little Cubs before we get to the top of the hour. Talk tournament with Ryan Horvat. We'll ask Ryan Horvat the most important question. How does he pronounce his last name? He's from the BetMGM Network. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score. Here's your host, Steve Rosenblum.
Welcome and welcome back. Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Top of the hour, Ryan Horvat will be here. BetMGM Network. We'll talk tournament, investing, all that kind of stuff. Field of 32 is off and running. But first, I wonder, I could talk about the Cubs and their curious pitching decisions, and that's being polite and wondering what they're doing and why they're doing it. But this is a story, maybe you missed this, and I think it harkens back to a wonderful time. And this is not old man shaking his fist at cloud. This is just an interesting comparison. Ron Washington, manager of the Angels, used to be manager of the Rangers and was portrayed wonderfully well and accurately in Moneyball. Because he was with the A's, too. And Brad Pitt is telling him, Wash, first base is easy when you're talking to Hanover. First base is very hard to play. And then they just go on. Anyways, Ron Washington managing the Angels. He has banned cell phones. Players can't use cell phones. Not in the dugout during batting practice or pregame. Not in the dressing room. Clubhouse. Nowhere near there. No place that, not even in the hallways. If you want to use a cell phone and you're a member of the California Angels or Anaheim Angels or Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim in Orange County next to Los Angeles County, not far from San Diego County, you're going to have to go a long way. You might have to go to San Juan Capistrano to use your phone. That's how far Ron Washington went. It's not a punishment, he says. It's about focus. And it's true. So he did this in Washington, and he had Michael Young, Adrian Beltre, and Ian Kinsler police it. You caught using your cell phone where you shouldn't be, $500 fine. So, guess who's one of the cops on the Angels now? Kyle Hendricks. Old friend Kyle Hendricks. He and Mike Trout.
He's a professor and a cop now.
He is. He's one of the cell cops. Mike Trout is the other. Now, Washington didn't demand that it's a $500 fine. The players can set that themselves. But he just wants it something. He wants an amount big enough to dissuade players from using it. It's really hard when you're, I mean, if you're making $27 million a year to find a figure big enough to dissuade somebody from using a cell phone if he wants. Players spend a lot of their lives in the clubhouse. Phone calls are very isolating, very distracting. It's not like old-time baseball. And by the way, Washington said, if you catch me doing it, you find me too. That's what he told Trout and Hendricks. So the old-time baseball, old-time clubhouses, it's a place where ball players talked ball. It was baseball. Baseball players talking baseball. They had no other distractions. There might be a TV in there, but they stuck around long after games. Most notable for me, the late 90s Cubs, I want to say 98, the steroidated parade float known as Sammy Sosa got all the headlines. After games, he and his handler were gone. Leaving nothing but his boombox, and that became a target later on. For reporters who stuck around, people like me, Barry Rosner, there were several of us who would stick around knowing what would take place, and we were sort of allowed to observe the moments because it was old-time baseball. Mark Grace, always cigarettes handy with an ashtray moving around. Jeff Blauser, he seemed to be the center of it. Seemed to be Blauser's locker was near the center of that closet that was known as the home clubhouse at Wrigley. Mickey Morandini, remember him? Mickey Morandini, second baseman. Remember Mickey Morandini? Yeah. And Rod Beck, shooter. They were all in various stages of undress or dress, depending how you want to look at it. You know, whether it was the long sliding pants and socks and shower shoes. Yeah, there you go. And the three-quarter sleeves. I used to think when I was a kid, the three-quarter sleeves were the bitchinest thing ever. They were the best shirts, three-quarters. Yeah, when I played baseball and the Little League did the vest thing with the three-quarter sleeves, that was the best. It was white shirt underneath and then colored three-quarter sleeves.
I just don't get how it works. So it doesn't go all the way down, but it goes kind of down.
Yeah.
If it would annoy me. It's on my elbows. I don't want that.
It's great. It was cool.
I'll try it out.
It was the height of cool. And Rod Beck, he with all that facial hair, as like trying out for ZZ Top, desperately in need of deforestation because there was a whole lot going on there. And the girthsome body, one of the greatest lines in baseball history came out of Shooter, when he was talking about his girth. And he said, never heard of a guy going on the disabled list with pulled fat. That would ring true with the I'm Fat podcast. And by the way, I have updates and news from them because the Sox released their food and the I'm Fat podcast was not there. But oh, what a story it is. That'll be next hour. And those Cubs, Shooter saving 51 games, beat the Giants in a one-game playoff. Barry Bonds and the Giants beat them in a one-game playoff. And went to the postseason, and Atlanta took their heads off. And that was the last postseason experience until Dusty's guys choked a lead of 3-1 and a lead of 3-0 in game 6. You know how that goes. Marlins, 2003. Team's idea of focus at that point became destroying Sammy Sosa's boombox. But at least they had focus and no cell phones. And now the Angels are doing it. Old-time baseball. I love old-time baseball. Now we're going to talk wagertainment. I'm going to take a break. We'll be back with Ryan Horvath, BetMGM, from the BetMGM Network, BetMGM Tonight. Full slate for you today. See where he thinks your money should go. Saturday Suckage. I suck so you don't have to. I've already proven that. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.